Many of us around the world know the stories of the most famous whistleblowers. We speak often about the likes of Julian Assange, Ed Snowden, and Daniel Ellsberg, to name just a few. But an important thing that we should never forget is that others are blowing the whistle every single day all around the world against waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety. And they do it largely in anonymity. That doesn't make it any less important. In fact, I would argue that it is more important to blow the whistle at the local level where we spend most of our lives. Our next guest is the perfect example of blowing the whistle in relative obscurity, where the authorities trick themselves into thinking that they can get away with clamping down on truth tellers. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Georgina Halford Hall joined the UK's Royal Navy upon graduation from school and worked in human resources before leaving to raise a family. She later returned to spend 3 years in financial services before moving to the Department of Works and Pensions, where she was a leadership and performance management specialist. She became the first internal human resources leadership and development consultant there, working for the chief of staff. In 2008, she went into the nonprofit sector as the chief executive officer of a charity. In early June 2014, she was surprised at her home when a police van drove up while she was in her kitchen preparing lunch. 7 armed officers wearing stab vests and carrying guns forced their way into her cottage and arrested her. She was charged with handling stolen documents and was taken to a police station for questioning. What was the catalyst for this action? Georgina had exposed bullying and systematic abuse at her son's school, which was one of the country's most famous military schools. She and her husband had sent their 11-year-old son to the Duke of York's Royal Military School because it claimed to instill military values in its students. Instead, it was a place of punishment, abuse, and bullying beyond the boundaries of decency. And more whistleblowing was to follow. That was in the charity sector. In the end, Georgina Halford Hall won her various legal cases, but that has not stopped the struggle. It's the life of a whistleblower, even one whose work might be, for the most part, under the radar. Georgina Halford Hall, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure, John. It's lovely to meet you.
I'd like to start at the beginning. You were a wife and a mother going about your business like any normal person. You were working and taking care of your family. And then one day, you were in your kitchen making lunch and your home was raided by the authorities. Tell us about that. Why did that happen? And what was your reaction?
Well, it's all part of a much bigger story. I have been given some information that I provided to law enforcement in the UK, and they gave it back to me and told me to look after it. And that information was all about child abuse in a school. I didn't actually expect to have my house raided by 7 police officers wearing their riot gear. They didn't wear their helmets. I suppose that's polite. Perhaps they should have taken off their shoes as well. But they were concerned that I had been handling stolen documents, that I had been inappropriate with people's data. In actual fact, all I tried to do is be an intermediary and pass it to the people who had the statutory powers, authority and will to want to do something to stop the abuse of children. And that just really led me into this journey of justice. It's about justice, isn't it? They picked the wrong woman on the wrong day. I don't know. Don't know what happened, but I just thought, I'm not putting up with this. And the police officers concerned, I said at the time, in the same kind of tone I'm talking to you, this is a career defining moment for you guys. And it was. I ended up sitting facing them at their own disciplinary hearings and seeing how I think fundamentally decent people have been misdirected, but they're going to pay for it for the whole of the rest of their career and their lives probably. In the meantime, none of the people involved in abusing children and covering it up, none of them have been properly held to account. It's been hushed up. People have been swept away. Their careers have probably been curtailed in some cases. But for the majority, it's had little or no impact. But I'm told that the police investigation is ongoing. I don't suppose there's much alacrity behind it. There's still a problem across most countries that these are just children. Everything's historical after it's happened. And we've got bigger things to do where the evidence will be easier to obtain and substantiate. And you've been in law enforcement. You know how difficult the, you know, how high the bar is, how you have to get your witness to be able to speak. And children are notoriously not listened to. So I suppose for me, this whole issue around whistleblowing is about access to justice and about ensuring that no matter who you are, how old you are, where you live, what your background is, you are not outside of that system, that it is open to everybody and that there are people who will facilitate access to ensure that you are listened to. And if you're speaking out about other people, that you are listened to on their behalf, so everybody is protected. We need a safety net for every citizen, not just in the UK, but around the world.
How long did this drag out? Presumably, the authorities tried to intimidate you by charging you with stealing some sort of documents. What was that all about, and how was it finally resolved?
You know, a lot of time has gone by. This all happened for me in June 2014. In fact, just over the 6th of June 2014. So you can see it's only 10 years. It's 9 years ago. And I tend to try and focus on the upside of it, that the action was taken, that the particular school that this relates to, the Duke of York's Royal Military School in Kent, I'm sure it's probably one of the safest schools in the world now. But it took a parent, because the people who were working in the school who had tried were brushed aside, but many of them didn't try because they were too afraid of what would happen to them. I don't think I'm braver than anybody else, to be quite honest with you. It just caught me perhaps at a time when I felt, I suppose, incensed enough to want to do something about it. And so as for my journey, yeah, it's still going on, really, because don't we all live with the legacies of what has happened? But what I would say is it's really made me recognise that most people are good. Most people are not awful, and many people get caught up in these conspiracies and cover-ups and so on, not because they set out to do it, but they get shut into a system. And I'm sure when you think back over your experience, John, that most of the people around you probably didn't think you were doing the wrong thing, but they thought you might have been able to do it in a different way. And I'm sure lots of people look at me and think you could have done it a different way, which is why now when I start advising people, I help them to avoid some of the bear traps that are out there and keep themselves safe.
Georgina, after your whistleblowing experience, you went on to found the group Whistleblowers UK. Tell us about Whistleblowers UK and the work that you're doing there. What do you focus on?
Well, it was founded by a small group of us. Some were whistleblowers, others were people who worked with whistleblowers and in senior positions. And it was about helping to facilitate access to justice and wanting, to use a bit perhaps a crass term, to stop people going nuts and digging themselves into holes and getting themselves into trouble. It was all about creating a community where nobody would have to walk this lonely road alone. Because we do say on our website, you're not alone, and you're not. I'm sure we just don't have enough facilities to help everybody, but we do try. And it's in our organisation's ideas were around identifying the commonality, developing a consensus about what legislation needs to look like to create fair, safe and a level playing field for everybody who speaks up. And we do that in the terms of practical actions. You know, we didn't just wake up one morning and go, that's what we're going to do, and that's what it'll look like. It sort of developed over a period of time, and more people joined us. And, our train now has got hundreds of people on it, and some get off and some get back on again. Some change direction altogether. But fundamentally, it's setting those principles that we want to help provide practical support, help and information for whistleblowers. And to do that, we've got a free confidential reporting platform, so they don't even have to speak to anyone if they just want to test the waters. We've got a great cadre of dedicated caseworkers who understand their sectors and also have developed real counselling skills that give people that reassurance, again, back to they don't feel alone, that they feel listened to, they feel understood, and we take it at the pace that they want to go, that the whistleblower wants to go at, and we don't judge, because everyone makes mistakes. Not every whistleblower is a good person, let's face it. You know, good people do bad things and bad people do good things, and some, you know, some just get all mixed up in both. But we have developed the most amazing team of lawyers led by Ian Mitchell, and he was in court representing a really complex case pro bono, and it's taken him months, supported by one of our junior and trainee barristers. All of this is what we've built, a community that respects and responds to each other. You know, at time we do charge, I'm sure you've heard about it in the criticisms, but we don't charge most people. We just ask people to contribute if they can. Because if we don't have any funders, we don't have regular funding, the government don't give us money, we are the only not-for-profit organisation. We're not a charity. So we struggle for funding, and we do the best that we can with what we've got. But we try to prepare whistleblowers, and we try to work with people to keep them mentally, physically and emotionally strong and able to go through a process that can take years and changes how people think and often changes lives. But we also try and work with the families as well, keeping everybody together, keeping that support network in place and being part of it. I talk about Whistleblowers UK as a family. As I said, people come on, they come off, they get on, they get off. But we're always there. And we remember that people at times behave in different ways because they're stressed and they're uncertain. You know, when you don't know what your future is, having had it all planned out, this is a massive shock to people. Back to the ethos of Whistleblowers UK, it's really about support, information and help and being a family. We've got, and I'm going to give him a good shout out because I want you to interview him, the amazing Nigel McLennan. He's just a fabulous guy. And he's a whistleblower himself, and he's been absolutely to hell and back. But he's now leading our peer-to-peer support and designing a really forward-looking process and a programme that will give our whistleblowers and anybody else who wants it even more support and confidence in about not just speaking up within our group, but to their employer or to an organisation, building capability, building a culture that we want to see from the inside out. We're trying to walk the walk we want other people to take, and we don't just talk the talk. And we accept it when we get it wrong, hence we're forever, you know, updating and trying to improve things, listening to our feedback. And on top of that, as you've asked me what we do, you know, you've just given me the ability to talk about all the things I love talking about. So we run events, we run conferences, we have twice monthly meetings, and we talk about topical things. We get people writing blogs, we get people involved in developing events, because this isn't about me. I'm really just the mouthpiece for it, but it's about all of those people and the richness of their experience and how that's driving the changes. And as a result of our work, as you know, I'm also the Director of Strategy and Policy to the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Whistleblowing. Now, there's a huge team of us now working around all of those parliamentarians. But we have developed the bill that they trusted us on, and it's going through our parliamentary process called the Protection of Whistleblowing Bill. It's going to transform the way we think about whistleblowing. And on top of that, we've now started to build a global team, a global alliance of people who are equally concerned. They might be NGOs, they might be whistleblowers, they might be, you know, professionals in different countries, because we have this ambition. And another one of our colleagues, Aris Danakis, over in Greece, came up with this brilliant term, a global treaty. Well, why not? And we're trying to develop what that will look like and invite as many people as possible to get involved and put their voice into this.
Georgina, thanks for being with us. Stay with us. We are speaking with British whistleblower Georgina Halford Hall. After the break, we're going to talk about her whistleblowing in the charity sector in the UK and the group she founded to help countless other whistleblowers.
I started in 1983, fishing with my father on a gillnet site. I feel exactly the same as a kid does when he goes out in the lake in a canoe and he's fishing for a panfish with a rod and reel.
My family's been halibut fishing for a really long time. My mom was pregnant with me, still longlining, and I grew up on longline boats.
I've been halibut fishing since probably 1978. It was my first year that I seriously went into it.
The exploitable biomass is near historic low levels. Growth rates have dropped.
Bottom trawling, when it's done in its worst form, has a leveling effect and has a tendency to really just sort of strip away everything that's there.
The way fisheries are changing, it's the way our country is changing. It's increasingly hard for small businesses to make it.
Abundant stocks are important. I mean, who wants to fish the last fish?
The message I would leave to you is the importance of not giving up, the importance of working together, and also the importance of taking care of your corner of the ocean.
La Banda Mazzotti non è un gruppo solamente musicale. La Banda Mazzotti è un gruppo di lavoratori comunisti che cerca di cambiare questa società. Il primo viaggio che abbiamo fatto con la carovana antifascista in Donbass era settembre del 2014.
Noi portiamo penne, matite, materiale per orfanotrofi e materiale per curare le persone nelle città, cosa che i nostri governi non fanno, inviano solamente bombe.
Ci siamo ritrovati ad andare in Palestina, in Siria, in Donbass, in moltissimi paesi, e ci siamo resi conto che eravamo forse l'unico gruppo musicale che andava là a sostenere una lotta, non a suonare.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with British whistleblower Georgina Helford Hall. She has blown the whistle against wrongdoing multiple times, first with regard to bullying in her son's military school, and next in a nonprofit charity. Georgina, thanks again for being with us.
It's great. I'm really excited.
Almost no whistleblower sets out to be a whistleblower. Most of us are professionals who are just going about our normal lives, but then you see evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality, and you feel compelled to say something. In the end, many of us either walk away from our careers and focus on whistleblowing, or we're thrown into the life of a whistleblower. You've embraced whistleblowing, and you have helped countless other whistleblowers who have followed you. Tell us about that.
Well, I'm really glad. As a former HR professional, I'm obsessed with evaluation and, you know, setting something out and what do we do. So we have a board of directors, we have our associate membership. I wish I'd looked up the numbers before I talked to you, but over 100. And we rely on those people to give us our feedback. But in terms of sort of the more easily measurables, we receive over 3,000 emails and telephone calls every year. We have at least, on average, and again, I've got to thank Joe for him doing our, back room stuff. And we get, on average, 3 inquiries a week that come through our MPs, our members of parliament. All of that demonstrates that people trust us. We get referrals from ACAS, which is one of the government bodies that do arbitration. We get recommendations from other law firms. We get recommendations from around the world. Just before I was speaking to you today, I was doing an interview for the Italian government with a translator. I think that what we've done is we've said, rather than be a hostage to perfect, let's keep moving with it, because it's too easy to get stuck in something and say, this is what we're going to do, and we're just going to do that. But when we recognise it's not working or the landscape has shifted, we've been agile and we've decided to respond to it and not criticise it. but take forward the best ideas at the best time. And that's, I think, why our sort of, and I call them a team or family, it changes. People want to be there and they'll say, well, what have you done? So in 5 years, I suppose, we've done a lot more than people have done in 15 or 20 or even 30 years in going from looking at the legislation we had, demonstrating why it doesn't work and proposing something that does. Because if you gift wrap it, it's easy for politicians. They've got millions of other things they're doing. Make it easy. Make it something they can own and understand and demonstrate how it's going to benefit other citizens. I think that's been the strength in what we're doing. We don't criticise. We always look for a solution, take that and then and discuss it.
I know that in your role as the founder of Whistleblowers UK, that you regularly advise businesses, members of parliament and regulatory bodies on whistleblowing legislation. I've done the same thing through the excellent organization Blueprint for Free Speech, which is based in Australia. It's been my experience that many countries are very desirous of draft whistleblower protection legislation, but then it becomes very hard to actually get that legislation passed into law. Tell me about your own experience with legislation. What's the reception been like in the UK?
We're very creative about the things that we do, and we've put in place things like templates to make things easier. And we are going to launch, I know it's very overdue, our handbook. But again, that will be free to everybody to give them an idea of how to whistleblow, not just in the UK, but globally. Although we have put in a section for how the law at the moment works in the UK to ensure that people don't fall into all of those bear traps. You know, running out of time, using the wrong language, not ticking the right box. It's those fundamental basics. It's really hard to do when you're not an expert in that area and you're also probably very stressed and under time constraints. So we look at trying to think of all the words now. I've lost my words, which is not like me. We look at, yeah, quite. I know you're laughing for a good reason there. So we look at getting people to map the chronology out. We get them to be clear. We support them in that process and provide that critical friendship. And then we try and do something beyond that, which is a psychological support. And all of our people are, you know, sort of trained in it, or they already have it naturally in the bucket loads, really. But we say, don't obsess about things. Don't speculate. Treat your whistleblowing like a job. Ensure that you balance this with your personal life. Maintain your relationships with your partners, your family, your friends. Don't go into your shell, because the one important thing is, or the most important thing is, that there is a life after whistleblowing. So you need to keep your mental, physical and psychological health really, really high. And if you don't do that, you also run the risk that if you end up in court or in any other form of legal process, it makes you less able to cope and more isolated. The one thing I've seen in the most successful whistleblowing cases I've personally been involved in is that there's a really strong grounding of the whistleblower in their family or their relationships and their friendships. And that keeps people going. Whatever happens, you've got to remember that you have a life after this. It's not going to last forever. And I don't think for me it does. And it's why I'm able to continue with my life around all of this. Yes, I work really hard on it and I'm very committed to it, but I don't neglect the people that I love in the process. And I don't make this their life. And I strongly believe, having looked at this with colleagues around the world, that there is a cycle of abuse, which isn't British or European. It's just international, because it's very unusual, as in your case, that only one person knows. Usually lots of people know about this. They might not have all registered it or recognised where the wrongdoing is or where the concerns are. But when you start talking about it, other people know. It's only when you decide as the whistleblower to actually make it formal and blow the whistle that it seems that it's like setting off an alarm bell, you know, pulling the ripcord. And rather than investigating the concern that most people know about, they're going to investigate you. Because I think that somewhere in our unconsciousness, that's about triggering other people's moral failures or other failures. And we're shining, in effect, by not doing something themselves, we're shining a light on that. And I don't know about this. I'm no psychotherapist, but I'm sure that there are all these other things that go on in people's heads. But you get investigated as the whistleblower. You're the one who gets put through all these processes. You're the one who's put to all the costs of lawyers and inconvenience, and that impacts your family and lifestyle. And then people take that choice, don't they? Am I going to keep going because I can't see an end to this, or I can't see myself recovering? So they leave. The organisation is like, hurrah, pulls up the flag again. This is this cycle. But what happens because it's a cycle is the next person comes along and says, hey, look at that dead elephant in the middle of the room, and it all starts again. And you see this pattern in organisations over and over again, where more than one person have known, more than one person has spoken up, but it's those that keep going that find themselves heading towards the exit. And that's what we've got to stop. Transform this way of thinking, and it isn't unique to us. I know that in America they have brilliant organisations, Government Accountability Project, National Whistleblowing Centre, there are loads of them, and I just love working with them because it reinforces that we're all right. And if we're all right, governments are going to talk to us. And we've been lucky to be able to talk with Senator Grassley's office over in the States as well. I genuinely think that the landscape has changed, that the mood music is different, and that for whatever reason, is it Ukraine or a whole rafter of things, the levels and COVID, of course. What about COVID? You know, all of this has made us realise that whistleblowers are the first line of defence against crime, corruption and cover-up. And if we don't listen to them, we're waiting for the next COVID. We're waiting for the next atrocity somewhere else. If we don't listen to those canaries, we are going to all suffer.
Georgina Halford Hall, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our viewers for watching. The great Greek philosopher Plato once said that honesty is, for the most part, less profitable than dishonesty. But the Arab philosopher Abu Bakr corrected that for us millennia later when he said, quote, "The greatest truth is honesty, and the greatest falsehood is dishonesty." He was right. Be honest. Do the right thing. I'm John Kiriakou, and you've been watching The Whistleblowers. Thanks for joining us. Until next time.